This is Tech News Briefing. I'm Tanya Bustos, reporting from the newsroom in New York. These days, Apple has been making it easier for you to get Apple stuff. But big picture, have rough times led the company to a radical shift in overall strategy? Once you needed an Apple device to get Apple services, but times change. Perhaps in rethinking matters, Apple wants to get a hold of your attention even if you don't necessarily have an iPhone. Has the time finally come? Is it blasting holes through its famous walled garden? We'll be looking through those holes for what may be going on inside Apple's mind after these tech headlines. And on Apple's next device menu this year, it plans to release three new iPhone models again this fall, including a successor to one struggling XR, the lower-priced 2018 device. The plan this fall is to offer two models with the OLED display and one model with LCD. Sticking with LCD comes as Apple grapples with sales of the aforementioned XR, and according to the Journal, for 2020, Apple is considering dropping the LCD model altogether, which would mark a complete shift to OLED display for iPhones. Slack Technologies is planning to go public through a direct listing, potentially making it the second big tech company, after Spotify, to bypass a traditional IPO. Slack, which operates a popular workplace app, is likely to debut in the second quarter, and the Journal says the company currently expects to do so via direct listing, though that could change. In a direct listing, a company bypasses the traditional underwriting process and lets the open market play a greater role in setting the price instead. Spotify is the only large company that has done one, debuting last year on the New York Stock Exchange. Slack, as of last year, had more than 8 million daily active users. Elon Musk's SpaceX plans to reduce its workforce by 10%. Amid a ramp-up of big projects, including one super-powerful rocket and thousands of advanced satellites. As SpaceX steadily racks up a string of historic space transportation accomplishments, the move is believed to be the most significant cutback since it gained international prominence about a decade ago. The company cites costly challenges in developing interplanetary spacecraft and global space-based internet, noting the cuts are due to, quote, the extraordinarily difficult challenges ahead, end quote. Coming up, taking a look at what Apple's small but radical shift in corporate strategy means for its ultimate staying power and, more importantly, your options as a digital consumer. Owning an Apple device used to be the only way to get its services and software, but things change. Now that Apple is on the defensive, one could make the argument that its famed walled garden could be holding it back. So its next move? Quite possibly the unthinkable. Being a little more like Microsoft, kind of. I have the perfect person to explain, actually. Joining us via Skype from Baltimore is friend of the podcast, Christopher Mims. Welcome back.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good. So we've been talking about this on the podcast. You guys have been talking about this on the Instant Message podcast. It seems like it's finally time for Apple. It's opened up the quote-unquote walled garden. So to see companies like Samsung and Amazon start to offer Apple services, you saw this coming, as you do, because this is what happens, right?
Right. I mean, we saw this strategy. Microsoft was a big proponent of this strategy. Windows was dominant. And, you know, they continued it arguably past its defensible life under Ballmer. Nadella came in and, you know, he started making sure that you could get Office on Android and that it was going to function really well on iPad. And Apple, you know, sort of in defense of the porousness of their walled garden in the past, you know, iTunes started being available on Windows in 2003, which helped the iPod take off. Mm-hmm. Apple Music has been available on Android since the early days, although you wouldn't know it. So in some ways, it's not so much that they're blowing holes in the walls of their walled garden as that they are just opening up ever more of them. And the thing that is confusing in this case, or is unusual really, is that they are sort of latecomers to this strategy, especially when it comes to movies, where, you know, the Apple TV has been around for a long time. And the Apple TV was the only way to get movies from iTunes for a long time, or, you know, obviously through other Apple devices. And the same thing with HomePod. And now to put Apple Music on Echo, to put iTunes movies on all of these different TVs. I mean, this isn't about porting it to one platform. This is going to go on Tizen, which is the OS on Samsung TVs. It's going to go on the Android variant that runs Sony's TVs. So they've made a big effort to make their movies available everywhere, to make AirPlay available everywhere, which is the thing that lets you stream movies or content from your iPad or your iPhone to a TV. They put a lot of effort into this, and they didn't have to. So it shows that they're thinking, okay, you know, we've really got to have this content and our and these services, you know, in all of these different places. And, you know, the question is this the end of it? Like, are there going to be, are you going to see an Apple Watch app for Android, for example? I think not. But if they did, that would be really remarkable. You know, are they ever going to put iMessage on Android? No. But again, anything along those lines would, I think, prove out this thesis that they are really lowering the barriers around their walled garden, which is something that Google has had to do forever and which Microsoft pivoted to and has profited handsomely from as a result.
You know, in reading your piece on this, one thing I started to think about was, you know, I remembered how Apple does indeed have these big plans to kind of go Netflix, go Hollywood, create its own content. If it does have big plans to do something like that, you could see how it would want to bypass certain walled gardens of sorts and get as many eyeballs as it can. Do you see, how heavily do you see that whole aspect weighing in here?
Well, it's rumored that Apple is going to launch a Netflix competitor. I know we're not supposed to use that word, rumored, at the Wall Street Journal. It is reported. It has been reported in ways that we have not yet verified, but it seems like it's coming. Regardless, we know that Apple is spending in excess of $1 billion on content, including stuff from Oprah Winfrey, a relaunch of an old show from the 80s, I think. From Steven Spielberg.
Right. What was it again? Yeah, we'll get that in post.
Yeah, I mean, you should put in a clip from the opening.
Yeah, I just might
post.
Do that.
You can find it on YouTube.
It was Amazing Stories, ladies and gentlemen. Amazing Stories.
It's really cool. Anyway, and so, you know, they are spending a ton of money on content. You know, their market share in the streaming device, and so they get a number of things out of making their content available everywhere. Number one is, for a lot of people in the developing world, this may be their first ever contact with an Apple service or device. And, you know, that can only help burnish their brand. People simply don't have these other Apple peripherals. That doesn't mean that they don't have an iPhone. That doesn't mean that making these services available on these other devices won't make the overall experience stickier, right? Because what is a way to make a platform stickier than get somebody to invest a bunch of money in an entertainment library, and then they're like, well, that's it for life. You know, like, I own 15 movies on iTunes, you know, sunk cost fallacy. I'm never going to switch after this. And then finally, all of their competitors do this. If Amazon, Google, and everybody else, and, you know, the independents like Roku, are all offering their content absolutely everywhere, Apple just, it's not tenable for them to continue, especially if they're paying for original content, to only have that on their devices. I mean, they could do it because they're Apple, they can do whatever the heck they want, but it's just incompatible with a strategy of having as broad a reach as possible and being a company that frankly is as big as they are.
Right. You know, again, that speaks to services and all the energy that needs to go into that now for Apple. Tim Cook has been saying services is still going strong no matter what problems Apple is having selling hardware. Our colleague Dan Gallagher has some problems with thinking that services is enough, though, to offset what's been going on here. What do you think about that?
Right. So we have been sort of, Apple watchers have been waiting to see services offset any dip in hardware revenue. But, you know, what we saw this last quarter was that services revenue growth dipped in line with hardware revenue growth. That, frankly, flies in the face of this narrative that services are going to make up for hardware revenue, which, you know, to be completely honest, is something that I have espoused in the past. So it's clear that services and hardware revenue are still linked. You know, so I think that Apple would like these two to be decoupled. You know, others who understand the inner workings of these things, like I was talking with folks on Twitter about this who have been inside these companies, are arguing, no, it's not necessarily that sophisticated. At the end of the day, this is just an attempt to make this all stickier, try to come up with some more incremental revenue. And, you know, you can never exactly predict what the effects of all this are. And it's it's not always clear what the strategy is, but you know, the two goals of making more money and making your hardware stickier are always things that, you know, somebody like Tim Cook should get behind.
Very good. We'll leave it at that. Christopher Mims, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it for the Tech News Briefing from the newsroom in New York. I'm Tanya Bustos. Thanks for listening.